Well, I've spent some time talking about husbands, love your wives, but you realize also that marriage is a partnership. It's a cooperative effort in which both parties have roles and responsibilities to fulfill. And so with that, we're going to also talk about the other side of that, and that is wives, respect your husbands, which comes out of Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 33. When a man enters into a covenant relationship with God, he obligates himself to those laws. And a woman, the same thing. She obligates herself to those laws. That's what being a Christian is all about. That's what that means, is that you abide by the terms and conditions, in essence, of your covenant relationship with God. So marriage is not a separate arrangement from one's covenant relationship to God, but an essential part of that. So one's service to God as a husband is part of his service to God as a Christian. And one's service to God as a wife is part of her service to God as a Christian. The reason why I say that is because wives, respect your husbands is not something extra. It's not something optional, like an optional requirement. It's part of being a Christian. And the reason I'm saying this, and I emphasize the same thing when I talk to husbands, I don't want wives thinking, I'm a good Christian woman, it's just that I don't respect my husband. Well, if you don't respect your husband, really, if you choose not to respect your husband, then you cannot be a good Christian woman. I want that to be very clear from the beginning. Part of being a good Christian woman is doing whatever God asks you to do. You don't have to like it. You don't even have to completely understand it. But you do have to comply. And so it is with husbands loving their wives. You don't have to like all of that, what that entails, but you have got to do your best to do it. Being a worthy woman, remember a lesson that we had done earlier in this series, being a worthy woman, is one who loves God, obeys his laws, serves others, and yes, respects her husband. The word respect really means to show deference, or we might say it differently, to defer to someone else other than ourselves in honor. So it means to esteem or to honor or to value someone or something. And if nothing else, there should be respect and honor toward the position or the role or the responsibility of the husband, because that's a God-given responsibility. If nothing else, at least that. But it's interesting there in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 33, where it says that wives are to respect their husbands. That same word for respect there comes from a Greek word from which we get fear or phobia. And it's the same word used in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 17, where it says to fear the Lord or fear God as you honor the brotherhood and so on. So the same word, fear for God, is also used in respect your husbands. I think the translators did well in translating one respect and the other one fear, because there is a slightly different usage or connotation or context in which those are used, but there is also a similarity. A husband is not the same level or authority as God by any stretch of the imagination, but a husband's role is closest, and I've said this before, it is the closest role to God on earth, and as we see in Ephesians 5, verse 22 and following, that we've studied several times now, he imitates the role of Christ toward the church. So there is to be a respect for his role and his position and his authority. And in honoring the husband, a wife also honors that covenant or that pact which they both made together to stay together and work together and, yes, love together when they got married. And it also honors the one who designed that pact or that covenant. And that, of course, would be God. Now, this goes both ways. By dishonoring one's husband, they also dishonor the covenant, and they dishonor the one who made the covenant possible. So we're looking at this balance here, then. We're understanding that, okay, there's a responsibility that I have before God. And that's something that man didn't come up with. Husbands didn't get together and say, you know what we really should do is get our wives to respect us, okay? It wasn't some kind of conspiracy by a bunch of men. This is God's revealed word. This is what he said. This is what he wants us to do. And so that begs a question, of course. Well, what does respecting your husband look like? And I want to tell you that I'm hitting some highlights here. There's more to it than this, but we would be here for a while, okay, just as we would be for husbands loving your wives. We'd be here for a while discussing all these. So my objective in this lesson is not to exhaustively, comprehensively tell you everything that is involved, but just to bring to your awareness the very thing that we need to remember here. The first thing to consider is a wife needs to honor his masculinity. Your husband is an adult man. He is not a child. I have seen wives treat their husbands like they were children. He is not a pet. I have seen wives treat their husbands virtually as though they were pets. He is not a figurehead in the household, something that's there holding a place but not really that important. He is not a thing to be manipulated. Just as the husband is expected to respect the femininity of his wife, so the wife is to respect the masculinity of her husband. Secondly, and part of that, is she is to honor his decisions. That does not mean, wives, that you cannot help make those decisions. In fact, it would be good for you to contribute to those decisions in a respectful manner. But it does also mean that somebody has to have the final say, the final authority, and make the final decision. And it doesn't mean you have to like what that decision is. Not everything that we're asked to do for God is pleasant or comfortable. Jesus did not lay down his life to save his bride because he enjoyed dying. He laid his life down to save his bride. So I want you to think about that, that there's something being asked of you that you may not always like, and you may want to resist, and you may feel like, well, I think there was a better decision that could have been made, and you might be right. But part of honoring your husband is to honor his decisions. Also, give him your primary attention. Wife may have many interests, and that's fine, but none of them must be at the expense of her soulmate. In marrying your husband, you, wife, put your husband above all other people on this earth. You chose that. You say, well, I didn't mean to do that. Well, you should have done some more research then, okay? Maybe you shouldn't have gotten married then. But now that you're married, you still chose that. You chose to honor him above all other people. I have seen wives put their own children ahead of their husbands. I have seen wives put their own family ahead of their husbands. I've seen them put their own friends or their careers or their hobbies or their worldly pursuits ahead of their husbands. That is disrespectful not only to their husbands, but it is disrespectful to the Word of God, which says, wives, respect your husbands. In Ephesians, rather, chapter 5 and verse 31 there, what we sometimes call the leave and cleave principle. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and shall be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. What he's really saying there, in essence, is the two come from two separate families in order to create a new family. But you know what happens sometimes, and Richard, you kind of touched on this a little bit. Sometimes we drag the in-laws and the other relatives and the sisters and brothers into the marriage relationship. So the husband is no longer just married to his wife, he's also married to her family and to, you know, her traditions and to all of those, that baggage basically that she brought into the marriage that she had no right bringing into the marriage, because the two were supposed to come out of those families and create their own family. That doesn't mean you can't have traditions, and it doesn't mean you can't visit mom and dad anymore. What it means is your husband is to be more important to you than your mom and dad. That sounds radical, doesn't it? Well, we're going to have a later lesson called honor your mom and dad, right? Or honor your father and mother. But we're not saying don't honor mom and dad. What we're saying is in the marriage relationship, who is closer to you than your own soulmate? You have become one. You and your husband have become one flesh. Doesn't it say that in that passage? Your husband did that. Don't you want him to honor that? And don't you, wives, want your husband to make you the most important person in his life? And that goes both ways then, doesn't it? I'm not saying you're not doing that. I'm just simply saying it goes both ways. So the husband takes precedent over mom and dad and siblings, etc. It also means that the husband must be given honor and respect above his and her own children. My children are very important to me. Most important children in the face of the earth. But my wife, as far as my respect level and my adoration and all that, my wife is more important to me than my kids. You say, well, that's very demeaning to your kids. No, that's very honorable to my wife. She came first, and I chose her. And I need to respect that, and she needs to respect her decision in choosing me as well. Doesn't demean the children at all. Unfortunately, I've seen this reverse so many times. I've seen a number of Christian families where the children are virtually idolized and the husband is basically a potted plant in the household. And that is just not right. It's not right because Chad's unhappy with that. It's not right because it defiles, in essence, the purity of what God has given us to do. Being respectful to your husband also means being submissive to his headship over you. I'm not going to belabor this point because we've already talked about it really at length. God has not asked for your wife's opinion on this matter, or husbands for that matter. Husbands have their role to fulfill, and so do wives. God has said, husbands, be the head of the wife. Wives, submit to your husbands. I didn't come up with that. That's not a church rule. That's not, again, husbands all getting together and conspiring and saying, you know what, we need to be the head. Make our wives, you know, the subordinate position here. This is what God has said works in God's world. These roles and relationships, I realize, may overlap, but they are never interchangeable. The husband is never to become the wife, and the wife is never to become the husband. Which gets to my next point here, is that you are not to assume control of his God-given responsibilities. As we just said, marriage, or the headship of marriage, is given to the husbands, not to the wives. And when a wife forcibly takes over his role, she is no longer a helpmeet, but she is a usurper. And if the husband, for his part, chooses to be irresponsible, because I've seen this so many times, where a husband says, hey, I don't care if my wife takes over. I kind of like that, so I can go do my own thing. And you, wife, help him to be irresponsible. Now you are an enabler and not a helpmeet. So you are either an enabler or a usurper if you go outside of the role that God has given you. And you say, well, yeah, but if I don't do it, then my husband won't do it, and I'm not addressing that right now. I'm simply saying that you have a role to fulfill, and you need to stay within that role, and the husband has his role to fulfill, and he needs to stay within that role as well. I can illustrate this easily. Have you ever seen parents who virtually do their children's homework for them? You know what I'm talking about? And the kids excel in school because of that, right? Sooner or later, the homework gets more than the parents can do, usually. And then the child is left with lack of educational skills because he was never forced to do the work that was meant to prep him for that time in the first place. It works the same way in marriage. If you keep doing your husband's work, then when the real pressure comes and when the real crises comes or when the real need for leadership comes, he will be entirely unprepared for that because you basically did all his homework for him. It's another way of looking at that. Along with that, there needs to be some allowance or tolerance for your husband to make his own mistakes. Sometimes wives, and with all of good intentions perhaps, they try to interfere with their husband's business in order to save him from making some kind of blunder or error. I want to be real clear on this. There's nothing wrong with you, as a wife, offering your counsel and your advice, and yes, even your warning. But sometimes the only way that a man is going to gain wisdom and maturity and experience is through trial and error. And so it doesn't mean the two things I'm going to describe. It doesn't mean just putting your hands in your pockets and going, well, he's going to fail. I'm just going to sit here and watch him fall. Gets what he deserves. And then after he falls, you sit there and say, you know what I'm saying, right? I told you so. That's always helpful, isn't it? That's always so endearing to a relationship when you see someone doing something that you knew would be wrong, but you let them do it anyway so they could learn a lesson, and then you come up to them after they're down on the ground, hurting and bleeding, and you kick them and say, told you so, you know, and walk away. And it's just so Christian, isn't it? No, it's not. So don't do that, okay? I'm not saying that you can't say anything to your husband. What I'm saying is that you need to, even in the context of his mistake-making, still learn to respect him. And the reason I say that is because, wives, I'm just confident that at some point you also made some bad decisions. You made your own mistakes. And I hope that your husband respected you even though you made those mistakes. The point I'm making here, too, is that submission and respect go hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. You can't say, I respect my husband, I just refuse to submit to him. That doesn't even make sense, okay? And at the same time, you can't say, well, I submit to my husband, I just refuse to respect him. That doesn't make sense either. But if you do respect your husband, then you will submit to him. And if you really truly are submitting to your husband, then you must also be respecting him. Because you can't do the one without the other. So let me just ask the wives a question, or pose a scenario here. Just wives, think about this. Are you honored when your children or someone else's children talk back to you and challenge everything that you say and continually correct your words? Like you can hardly get the words out and they're right there saying, what you meant to say was, or that's not right. Here's what you should have said. Or complain about the decisions that you made, or just simply outright disobey you. Children are supposed to submit to you, and you would likely be very upset if they do not. And you say, well, that doesn't really bother me. Then you've got a bigger problem there, because children are supposed to submit to you as an adult. And that ought to upset you when it doesn't happen. Now, here's the question I really want to pose is, do you do these same things to your husband? And if you do, how in the world does that respect him? If you feel very offended and upset and yes, disrespected by how children treat you, and if you're doing the same thing that they're doing to you, to your husband, how in the world is that respectful? And furthermore, are your children, or perhaps are your grandchildren, watching you when you do these things? You know that children who habitually do those things I describe, talk back, challenge, continually correct, etc., they either lack discipline or they're simply imitating what they see going on in the home. I'm not making accusation here. I'm just simply saying, by observation, that sometimes these things happen in families. And it's not right. It's not respectful. Disrespect does not have to be overt, active, face-to-face. It can be passive-aggressive, which kind of means indirectly, behind the back. Not all up front, but there nonetheless. For example, imagine a mother speaking to her children, and they're about to do something, some activity, and the mother says to the children, I know Daddy says we should not do this, but it'll be all right. I want you to think about what message that mother just communicated to her children there. Disobeying dad is okay if he doesn't know. What he doesn't know won't hurt him. How are you honoring your husband and his role as a husband if that's what you're doing? I don't know anyone here that's actually doing that, but I know it happens because I've seen it happen. Or suppose a husband says, you know, we need to cut back on our expenses. That's a decision that he made. And then the wife immediately goes out and buys some new shoes, expensive new shoes. And the husband confronts her and says, why did you do that? I just said we need to cut back on our expenses. And she says, you know I'm going out with the girls tonight, and I can't wear old shoes. The message that she just gave to her husband was, in essence, my wants and my friends are more important to me than honoring you. That's what she just said in so many words. Remember our lesson on communication? It's not always the words themselves that are communicating. It's the implication of those words as well. Any manipulation of your husband with sex, your bad temper, your hostility, your deceptions, your dredging up the past, and things like these defy every definition of respect or submission that fails to honor your husband and it fails to honor God. Now again, I'm not saying that you wives are doing this. And if you are doing this, I don't know about that. But I'm just simply saying this is typical human behavior. People who are not conditioned by the gospel tend to act this way. And that doesn't mean that Christians are automatically exempt from that. It means sometimes they act the same way as people who are unconditioned by the gospel. Sometimes a wife believes that she is the smarter, the more capable, and the more resourceful of the two spouses, and quite frankly, that may be true, okay? I'm not denying that. But even so, it does not exempt her from her God-given responsibility to honor her husband. God did not say, honor your husband, unless, of course, you're smarter than he is. He didn't say that. He didn't put any conditions on that. He says, respect your husband. He didn't say, respect him only if. He didn't respect him only when. He says, respect your husband. For example, a wife might feel like, I'm the only one who can do anything right in this household. Now, no hands, please, but wives, have you ever felt that way? And sometimes what wives do in response to that feeling is they dominate and control every situation in the household. And that kind of wife will not serve as a helpmeet to her husband. Instead, what she's doing is, first of all, developing what's called the martyr complex. Poor me. Look what I have to do. Look what I have to put up with. My husband, loser. My kids, they don't help. I'm the only one in the household who has any sense, who has any intelligence, who can actually be resourceful enough to get things done. Now, you think that's just a stretch of the imagination. I challenge you, watch most of the commercials on TV, and that is virtually what is being communicated. The husband can't do anything right. I can't buy laundry detergent. I don't know how to clean a kitchen. I don't know how to vacuum. I'm just an incompetent, you know, bumbling idiot. I don't know. But the wife comes along and says, I'll do this because I'm better and I'm more resourceful and I know how to buy things. And there's a message being communicated through our media that says, in essence, that husbands, the only thing you're good for is going out and earning some money and bringing it home so the wife can spend it wisely and effectively. And sometimes that spills over into the church as well. And then the wife gets the poor me complex, and she becomes bitter toward her husband, and she makes it difficult to love her or even live with her in some cases. Meanwhile, the husband is being dishonored as someone who is being resented rather than respected. This stuff happens. And sadly, sometimes it happens in the church. Here's another scenario that you might disagree with me on. I'm going to say it anyway. Richard touched on it. I'm going to take it a step further than Richard took it in his Wednesday night talk. I've heard so many times over so many years that I just want my husband to listen. This is what wives say. I just want my husband to listen. I don't need him to fix anything or offer solutions. Let me just say, in some cases, that may be the best solution right there, is the husband, just listen to your wife. Okay? So I'm not saying that in every case the husband should say something. But as Richard pointed out himself, God made men to be analyzers and fixers and solvers, as well as listeners and sympathizers. By denying your husband any opportunity to help you or to offer his perspective or to even suggest solutions, how does that respect your husband? In a sense, what the wife is saying then is, I'm going to figure this thing out without your help. I just need you to listen and watch how I do it. That is not respectful. That is arrogant. And now, you might not have meant it that way, women, if you had said that to your husbands. And I'm not saying that every time you say, I just need you to listen, that that's what you're intending at all. What I'm saying is that it can descend to that easily enough. And it's very demeaning to the man. Basically, it's communicating to him one of three things. First of all, I believe you are not able to help me. Secondly, I do not trust your judgment, husband. Thirdly, I just need you to do this one little role for me, and then I'll take it from here. In other words, I'm self-reliant enough that I can actually do this. I just need you to carry out your little token figurehead role here. Just listen to me while I spill it out. And then I have to wonder, when I hear things like that and when I see that thing happen, I wonder how those women's relationship with God is. Because then what I'm thinking is they're probably doing the exact same thing with God. God, I just need you to listen to my problem. I'm going to fix it. I don't really need your help. I already know what I'm going to do, but as I pray to you, I just need you to hear me, and I just need you to show compassion on me. I just need you to play this little role for me, and then I'm going to take it from here, and I'm going to go and do what needs to be done. I don't know if that actually happens, but it would be a natural continuation of that very attitude right there, and that is not a good thing. And I'm not saying just wives do it either. I think that's a human thing. I have seen or heard wives criticize or berate or virtually trash their husband's name, especially in the company of other women. He's so helpless. He's so incompetent. He's so one-track-minded. He's so thick-headed. Not only is that hugely disrespectful, but it makes me wonder if the husband is really such a lunkhead as she has described him to be, then why did you choose to marry him? And what does that make you? And would you like your husband to talk that way about you to his friends? Would that be honoring you? And would that be part of husbands love your wives? My point here that I'm making here is that disrespect and dishonor is a very easy path to go down, especially when you are angry or disappointed with your husband. It's an easy choice to make, and it is the path of least resistance. And when we talk about the path of least resistance, really what we're dealing with here is it's the lazy route, because it takes the least amount of effort, it takes the least amount of discipline, and yes, it takes the least amount of resisting the other things that come up. God does not say only respect your husbands when you're not angry with him and when you're not disappointed with him. He says, wives, respect your husbands. In 1 Peter chapter 3, in verse 1 and 2, read with me if you would. I know it's part of the scripture reading, yes, and I know we did the same scripture reading virtually last week. It's just that it's one of the best passages to go to for the subjects at hand. Chapter 3, verse 1 of 1 Peter. In the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so that, even if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives, as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior. The situation Peter describes here is hypothetical, but it is that of a believing wife with her unbelieving husband. And what he says in essence here is, through her respectful behavior toward her husband, she can melt his heart and actually make the gospel sound attractive. Imagine a husband there with a wife like that. He's an unbeliever, but his wife keeps treating him with all kinds of respect and holds him high with dignity and so on, and he's just blown away by that. And he's thinking to himself, what is this message that has made my wife such a great person to treat me, that doesn't deserve this, with such high honor? I need to look into this message some more. It's really what Peter is saying, is that she will, by respecting her husband in that way, will draw him to that which made her that way in the first place, which is a powerful thing. And if that is true in that situation, then how much more true should it be in a much better situation where the husband and the wife are both Christians? In other words, he's not saying just be respectful to him until he becomes a Christian. Then you can treat him like dirt, like every other wife treats her husband, okay? No, he's saying in essence, this is what God expects of women, wives, anyway. And there's a purpose behind it, whether you are a Christian, or your husband, I should say, is a Christian, or he is not. Part of chaste and respectful behavior here is what God wants of all wives, not just those trying to win their husbands to the Lord. It's that kind of wife that finds great favor with God. It's that kind of wife that represents him well. And Peter goes on here in verse 3 and 4, and he says, your adornment must not merely be external, braiding the hair, wearing gold jewelry, putting on dresses, but let it be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. He's not saying you can't braid your hair, wear jewelry, or dresses. What he's saying is, what's more important than that is what's going on inside of you rather than what's being seen outside of you. Looking beautiful, then, is not nearly as important to God as being beautiful. It's really what he's saying. Being beautiful on the inside. Because being beautiful refers to one's character and disposition and internal person. And any wife, regardless of her looks, regardless of what dress she wears, any wife can have that. Any wife can do that. That's what he's saying here. Then he talks about the hidden person of the heart. The hidden person of the heart. There's something internal here, something hidden, something very sacred to that person, if you will. As the result of that woman's personal and conscious choice, it's not something her parents decided for her. It's not something her husband decided for her. It's not something the church decided for her. It's something she decided for herself, regardless of what her husband or parents or the church even does or does not do for her. It's something that she makes happen by a decision that she determines herself. I am going to be this kind of person because I choose to be this kind of person. Likewise, of course, if she is not beautiful on the inside, then it's no one's fault but her own. You cannot blame your husband. You cannot blame the church. You cannot blame God because you are an ugly, bitter, wretched person on the inside. Those are decisions that you've made, if indeed that is you. And you can opt out of those decisions by re-choosing much better things. Then he talks about this imperishable quality here of a gentle and quiet spirit. In other words, this woman is not one causing trouble. She's not acting in defiance. She's not kicking against the goads, but she's respectfully submitting to God and to her husband. Not saying, I respect God and I submit to him. It's just my husband. You know, he's just so disappointing. I just don't see myself in a position of submitting to him. Maybe when he shapes up, you know, then I can respect him and submit to him, but for now, I'll just choose to respect God and honor his laws. You just can't do that. Not honestly, anyway. Such attitudes and qualities and characteristics, this imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, that, God says, is precious to him. And it is not important what society thinks or what your peers think or even what your husband thinks about that. It's what God thinks about that. It's not important, by the way, what other women do or do not do. Sometimes women get together and almost collectively form a decision as to how we women are going to do things. And you should not operate that way. If you're going to do it about sewing or cooking or, you know, that sort of thing, fine. But when it comes to Scripture, you've got to be a Christian who does things the way God wants you to do them, regardless of who else does or does not do them. These same thoughts are echoed over in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 1 through 9. I'm going to turn over there, and I'm not going to expound on this passage to anyone's satisfaction. I tell you that up front. Because there's a lot here going on, and there's a lot of controversy, I think, in some of this passage here. But I do think also there's some of it that's pretty straightforward. Verse 9 of 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 9. Likewise, Paul says, I want women to adorn themselves with proper clothing, modesty and discreetly, not with braided hair, gold, pearls, or costly garments, but rather by means of good works, as is proper for women making a claim to godliness. Doesn't that sound familiar? Kind of sounds like what Peter just said, only Paul is focusing on good works, Peter is focusing on her inner spirit, but both of them are talking about the same woman, the same kind of woman. They're not talking about two different women. Like, look at this one. She focuses on good works, but this one has a great inner spirit. No, he's talking about the same woman. The woman who has a great inner spirit will also be one who does good works. So that's the emphasis there. If you're going to take these two passages together, they're the same kind of person. But then you read there in verse 11 and 12, and here's where we get into the controversy. Okay, verse 11, a woman must quietly receive instruction with entire submissiveness, but I do not allow a woman to teach or exercise authority over a man, but to remain quiet. Now, in my opinion, this is Chad's opinion here, kind of off the record sort of thing, right? The word for woman here can be translated either woman or wife, depending on context. Comes from a Greek word, gune, which means woman or wife. The translators sometimes treat it as a wife, and sometimes they treat that word as a woman, as far as translating is concerned. In this particular place, they use the word woman. In my opinion, I think the context demands that he's talking about specifically a wife. And the reason I say that, first of all, is the context itself, because of what he's talking about. Secondly, I think it's because of the example that he uses to support the very position that he just said, which is that of Adam and Eve, who were not just two random people who happened to be walking along the earth at the same time. One happened to be male, one happened to be female, but are actually husband and wife. And the one was told, in essence, to respect her husband. And I think it's in that context that we should read that. If you read it that way, a wife must quietly receive instruction with entire submissiveness, but I do not allow a wife to teach or exercise authority over her husband, but to remain quiet. And I think the context there would be, of course, in a public assembly, because in their privacy, then they can talk and converse. But Paul has said elsewhere, 1 Corinthians 14, that he's talking about assembly when he talks about the woman being quiet in that context. This is where the lesson goes off into another lesson. And I can't take time to explain all that right now, but just think about it that way. The point here being still the same. The wife shows no respect to her husband's role as head of the wife if she is publicly telling him what to do, what to say, or even how to believe. Imagine we're in a Bible class in a public assembly, for example. A husband raises his hand, starts commenting, and the wife cuts him off midstream, mid-sentence, and says, no, that's really not correct. What it should be is, and I think it's that exact scenario that Paul is dealing with right there. You are not being submissive. You are not allowed to do that. And you are to remain quiet in that public assembly. And if you've got something with your husband, then take care of it in the privacy of your own home. You say, well, you're reading a lot into that text. Well, and I grant you that. But I think if you start putting together all the different passages that Paul and Peter speak about this subject, that's where I think the case is going to be made. We just don't have time to do that this morning. But think about the scenario that I gave you nonetheless. Furthermore, it is she, the wife, who is to accept the subordinate role, not her husband. And it's not because she is a lesser human or because she is devalued as a person or because she is less important than her husband. It is because of authority, which is not something that Chad came up with, and it's not something that the church came up with, and it's not something that men got together and conspired together and said, you know what, we got to get these women in line. It's not like that. It's something God came up with, if you will, and imposed upon all of us. And says, men, be the head of the marriage, of the family, and yes, in a sense, even of the congregations. And women, help those men, respect those men, submit to those men. And there's your role, men, and there's your role, women. And this is going to provide for a working relationship in the group, in the marriage, in the family. And this comes from God. Someone says, I don't like that. Okay, you don't have to like it. But if you're going to be a Christian, you've got to obey what he says. Once again, marriage is more than just a civil arrangement. For Christians, it's part of our covenant agreement with God. How we act, how we behave, how we conduct ourselves in marriage bears directly upon how we act and behave and conduct ourselves as Christians. No husband or wife is perfect, but God is not asking for perfection. He's asking that each spouse strive to be perfect and not give themselves crutches and excuses as to why they can't strive. In Titus chapter 2, verse 3 through 5, if we had more time, we'd go into that. But it says in essence there that wives who love and submit and respect their husbands avoid bringing reproach upon the word itself. And that means that wives who will not love their husbands and who will not submit to their husbands and who will not respect their husbands do bring reproach upon the word. That's at least what you should get out of that passage. And the question I would pose to the wives of this group, this audience here right now, is which one are you? Are you the one that is submitting and respecting and, yes, loving your husband? Or are you the one shaking your fist and saying, I will not do that? Or he's such a louse, he doesn't deserve that. I'll talk about that in the next lesson, by the way. Love and respect. Or are you the one that loves and submits and respects as God has asked you to do? It ought to be every wife's, every Christian wife's ambition to show respect for God through her respect for her husband. And those wives who take that seriously and do their best to honor that, God is well pleased with that. God wants you to do that. As I said, lots of stuff we could talk about. I'm going to limit this subject, as far as specifically to the wives, to this one lesson. Okay, because I know better. I just can only take so much heat. And it's a tough thing to get up here and say what I just said up here, and I hope that you respect that. But the point I am making here is that we have just scratched the surface. There is a lot to this. And we will touch on the love and respect relationship and aspect next lesson. So hope that you can be here for that. Meanwhile, this is our opportunity in our service for you to respond if you need to. If you need to come forward in response to the gospel call, if you need to be baptized, if you're prepared to do that and become a Christian, or if you have other spiritual needs that we can help you with, come forward if you need to as we stand and sing the song Roy has selected for us.